Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. John Justice, producer Robbie, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien in studio. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Always fun to be in here.
Man, I saw somebody, so Nolan West, like the photo must have gone viral. Nolan West earlier this week on, I guess it was Tuesday, had posted a photo. It was like an aerial shot of in Blaine. Of the line at Chick-fil-A, you know, when they did their free food giveaway. I saw people, I'm not surprised by this, it's Minnesota, but I saw people that were posting on X, this is a failure of policy. Why are we allowing drive-thrus in our communities? I couldn't, originally they just said this is a failure of policy, and somebody rightly was like, what policy? And they were just like, infrastructure policy and the way that we construct our roads and why do we do drive-thrus? And I'm like, I mean, this is capitalism at its finest. I'm looking forward to Chick-fil-A. The great taco wars of Blaine have now been superseded by the great chicken wars of Blaine. It's a nice little area being built up over there. So yesterday, well,
is that Lexington and Concord? Is that like the Battle of Lexington and Concord, the chicken and the tacos, right?
Sure.
Would that be?
Yeah.
I guess that would make sense.
I'll give you that one. I'll give you this, too.
You're fascinating to talk to.
Thank you. A little historical reference there. And I have not yet begun to fight, as the great John Paul Jones said.
Originally, Jeff, I was going to have you in. We will talk about this in a moment. Do unbiased jurors exist in an age of social media? It's focused on Trump, but I thought it was just an interesting larger conversation. I was talking about TikTok a moment ago, especially as it relates to the Derek Chauvin trial. I know that's one of the arguments that his defense team were laying out. But then the news broke yesterday that the state court here in Minnesota dismissed the lawsuit to kick Trump off the 2024 ballot here in Minnesota, but did leave the door cracked open for the possibility that they could boot him off the general election ballot in November. So your instinctive reaction, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, to this decision?
I wasn't surprised by it. You know, the way when it talks about being the dismissed, the piece related to the primary election, and they said dismiss without prejudice as to the general election. Now, they also, it's like a two-sentence order, and it says that they released the order now in the interest of efficiency and time, and because it's time sensitive, with an opinion to follow. So we don't know the court's reasoning yet. They're going to issue an opinion later.
Is that typical?
No, it's normally you would get the opinion at the same time,
right,
as the order, but they're just doing this because they want to, you know, move things along here. The reason they're saying no for the primary, I mean, and I predicted this before, you know, he hasn't been convicted of anything. You know, you can argue, you know, the folks that are bringing this lawsuit can argue all they want about what his role was on January 6th, but he hasn't been convicted of in any of these cases. And it would be to me, the DC case, the January 6th stuff, or the Georgia case, where you might try to use this insurrection issue, against him. So that's why they left the door open for the general, because if he gets convicted between now and between the primary and the general election, then the other side's going to have the right to bring that case again. So we'll just have to see, what happens. So I do say, and I told you this off air, I don't understand why particularly the Democrats are so intent on knocking him off the ballot. He's been doing so well for them in elections since he got elected. So,
well, I wonder, I wonder if it's just a matter of, we want to throw as much at him as we can. So the thought is they could damage him further, you know, moderate. Nah, okay, let me rephrase. I don't want to say moderate. Republicans that don't necessarily support him, less inclined and even more so to throw support behind him with these continued legal battles that he's facing. So, you know, even if we don't get a conviction on this stuff, we can still do damage to him. And if we do, then that's just a bonus. That's where I totally understand what you're saying. And I agree. You know, at this point in time, if he is that damaged, why would you not want to compete against him? But there's a similar argument going the other way, was it relates to Biden, whether or not he, you know, still runs next year or not. And I haven't quite landed, you know, on whether or not he should. I mean, I think he should drop out simply because I don't want him as president. I don't think he has his mental faculties about him to be, you know, to be in that position. But in terms of winning the election, I don't know which way is better, having him on the ballot or not having him on the ballot. And I think it largely depends on who the other individual would be that would replace him.
Right, right. Yeah, it's again, get back to how many hundreds of millions of people in this country, and this is the best two that the two parties can offer. I don't get it.
We're stuck in a moment and we can't get out of it.
Yeah. But you know, this is going to be, well, I think there's a couple other cases where similar, you know, efforts to remove him from the ballot. So ultimately, when you have, you know, various jurisdictions with similar issues, this is ultimately going to be headed for the U.S. Supreme Court to determine whether or not a presidential candidate can be removed from the ballot under this provision. So we'll see. There's a lot more to go on this one.
Yeah, we have, as you mentioned, similar lawsuits filed in other states, including Colorado. The state trial judge there heard arguments last week. And again, as you mentioned in the piece here from Breitbart, points to the same thing. The U.S. Supreme Court has never ruled on this provision of the 14th Amendment, and speculation on what the court might do runs the gamut. You have speculation on that? Depending on, I mean, does it really just come down to whether or not he's been convicted, much in the same way of what's happened here in the Minnesota Supreme Court?
I will say, unless there is a conviction prior to the election, they're going to just punt on it and say it's, you know, there's it's not ripe for determination because, you know, you'd have in order to prove that he was involved, you'd have to have the conviction. So we'll see what happens. I mean, and this goes to your other issue with the juries. I think he is going to get convicted in D.C. I mean, you've got a jury pool, which is what, 99.9% Democrat.
Right.
And an Obama appointee judge, he's going to have appeals, obviously, but I can't see where he's not going to get convicted in that one.
Well, so really quick on that, because I want to go back to the Minnesota case here in just a moment. But to what you were saying, I think I saw yesterday, but apparently the wife of the judge in that D.C. case had posted online, like, just some blatant anti-Trump nonsense on X of him with his head shaved and the orange jumpsuit, another one with an expletive blank Trump being spray painted on a wall. I assume that there's a disconnect there, even though she's married to the judge, or does that come into, you know, is there any legal grounds there where somebody could go and
come? No, I think it's, I mean, we saw this with Justice Thomas, with his wife and her political activities, and, you know, the other side trying to, you know, his opponents trying to use that as grounds to remove him, right? So I don't think a spouse's online activity is enough to provide grounds to remove a judge. I don't know if they're actively seeking that. I don't know. All this stuff is ultimately going to get run up to the Supreme Court.
And I'm not saying that should be the case either. I was just wanting to know your expertise there. Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. On the Minnesota keeping the door open, we talk about an insurrection conviction. What does that look like? I mean, does that him? He has to be charged with insurrection, and it's determined that it was an insurrection, or is there wiggle room in there where it could be just enough where the implication or some type of ruling that has just the wording in it?
I think the court still has to go to finding that what January 6th was an insurrection, right? Or the two cases to me that would raise the issue, because I don't think the New York stuff with involving his business organization, that's not going to, or the Stormy Daniels payoff, that's not going to trigger it, right? The document case down in Florida, that's not going to trigger
right.
it. It's the DC case specifically involving his role in January 6th. And the Georgia case, which is under this RICO statute, where they were seeking to overturn the results of the Georgia election, or the presidential election in Georgia. Those two cases would be the two that if I was looking at where the other side could argue constitutes an insurrection. You know, those would be the two that you would have to me, before you have any discussion here, you'd have to have a conviction in one of those two cases.
Talking with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, do you have any thoughts on, I don't know firsthand, so maybe this might be an unanswerable question at the moment, but with the cases that he's facing, I know some could carry potential jail time while others are just monetary issues. Do you know which ones those are off the top of your head?
I don't. I've read some commentary about the DC case and whether or not, if the judge really wanted to go that route, if he is convicted, you know, remanding him into custody during the campaign and then shutting down rallies and everything else. I don't know if they would do that or how that would play out. I mean, there would be obviously an immediate appeal if there is a conviction in any of those cases. But we'll have to see. You know, like in Georgia was the first one where they took the mugshot, right?
Right.
And they were like hell bent on taking the mugshot. And of course that backfired on him because 3 hours later he's selling merchandise with the mugshot on it, right? So I don't know what's going to happen. But theoretically, yes, the DC and the Georgia cases have the potential for jail prison time.
Do you think the expectation for those that filed the lawsuit here in Minnesota to boot him from the ballot, do you, and just speculation, but do you think that their expectation was this ruling as well, and that they were anticipating that it will also get kicked to the Supreme Court at some point in time?
I don't know what their expectation was. A lot of them was, former elected officials and former state Supreme Court justices,
or
maybe they just wanted to have their name in the paper again. I don't know. Maybe they just, or they're just throwing this is part of a plan to just keep throwing these cases out there to, throw sand in the gears and make him spend money that could be spent elsewhere. I don't know.
Moving over to the topic of unbiased jurors, if they exist in an age of social media for jury trials, let's go to a talk back here to sort of set the stage on our conversation this morning with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien.
On the topic you just mentioned, is it possible to find an impartial jury in these days of social media? I have this question. Why can't we require by law there to be 6 Democrats and 6 Republicans on any jury? That way that we could get something that's not so heavily leaning towards Democratic pronouncements.
You'd never get a consensus.
No.
That's not how juries are chosen.
No. And we're talking about the Trump cases. Yeah, then there may be a partisan breakdown, but for a lot of other cases, it's not a matter of Democrat versus Republican. And plus, saying that, we have an equal number doesn't mean that, that whatever side supposedly, right. In this case, remember the debates, right? I think the debate commission was a bunch, the Republicans hated Trump.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So that, that would not be, I don't think that would be the solution.
So let's get into this question. The article that I have here is from The Conversation. It says this trial dates approach for Trump and the indictments. Both he and prosecutors are already claiming it'll be hard to secure an impartial jury. Trump has said that a jury pool is already biased in D.C. Residents tend to vote for the Democrat Party. Trump's lawyers, those prosecuting him, aren't the only ones grappling with this problem of finding unbiased jurors in an age of social media. I'll start off with a sort of a broader question. I mean, just the idea of a sequestered jury needing to stay off of any sort of media outlet. I go back to like the O.J. Simpson cases and stuff like that. I mean, we're just in a world right now where that seems to be just impossible. I mean, how is that being dealt with? Has that been dealt with now when it comes to jury trials as it relates to the influence that could taint a jury pool?
Well, what I would say, John, is in my experience is more on the civil side. And we occasionally there's jury trials on the civil side, but it's where criminal, where you have the right to a trial by jury. But I think that the system, people focus on a decision that they may not agree with in a district court case. You mentioned the Chauvin case, we don't know what's going to happen with these Trump cases. something like that, where it's a high profile case, and some people have their opinion, and then they, because it goes the other way, they say, well, how could anybody possibly see other way than I do? But I do think that the system already has mechanisms in place to correct a wrong decision, perhaps by a biased jury, right? We have example in Minnesota. If you have an appeal as a matter of right to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, if you file within the timeline, they have to hear your appeal. Okay, so if you disagree, if you disagree with the decision in a district court case, you automatically get an appeal right. You also have, if you still disagree with the decision, you can petition the Minnesota Supreme Court to hear your case and render its decision. Okay. You have federal courts. If you remember way back when in the '90s with the Rodney King verdict out in California, where the state court where the officers were acquitted in state court, and then the federal government, the Department of Justice, brought a federal civil rights claim, and they were convicted under the federal case. So there's a lot of different mechanisms out there. We saw this, you know, this was notorious back in the 50s and 60s in the Jim Crow South, right? Someone would do something and get off, because again, biased jury. So we've always been dealing with it. It's just a matter of, you know, we have a system set up for appeals and overturning appeals. And, you know, when you have bench trials, when the judges are making decisions, you know, they don't like to be overturned, right? So they're a little bit more hemmed in the fact that they know that you can appeal and a court of appeals could overturn you. And if you keep getting overturned, you know, you start to get a bad reputation.
Sure.
If you're always being overturned, right? So there are some safeguards in place, but no, you know, There are certain cases that it's just very difficult to find jurors that don't know anything about the case.
The question of an impartial jury did reach the Supreme Court in 2021 in the case of the lone surviving Boston Marathon bomber. Much of the news coverage focused on whether the court would uphold the death penalty. The case also presented a fundamental question in an era of social media. Is it possible to find unbiased citizens to serve on a jury in a high-profile case? They ultimately ruled that the jury selection process was both eminently reasonable and wholly consistent with legal precedents and upheld the death sentence penalty. In your describing Jeff O'Brien, again, lawyer extraordinaire, I imagine I was thinking, all right, maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way, and maybe this is more in changing tactics in terms of the defense or prosecution in presenting their case, mm-hmm. in addressing those particular issues, in having to take perhaps an added step, which you mentioned they already have in cases where you've got a lot of coverage in the media, of making sure that that's your job, I guess, is to dispense from narrative versus facts and reality. So maybe this is more. Maybe I was looking at this less on the finding an impartial jury and more on putting it on the, you know, on the teens themselves to do the work necessary to present the truth to the jurors themselves, right?
That's possible. Yeah, you know, the other thing too, and I think it's more of an issue in the police homicide cases, right, where you have an officer that's accused of murdering, somebody. The Chauvin case,
sure.
Okay? You know, now that my understanding is that case is still, there's still an appeal ongoing over the issue of should he have a new trial in a different venue, right? And I think that the bigger concern, especially with those types of cases, is, and when this is where it comes into social media, is the risk of a juror being outed as being a juror, right? And then finding, you know, the doxing them and finding out where they live and all that. You know, that issue, I don't know that we have an adequate solution for as of yet. When you have those highly emotionally charged cases with the possibility of a violent response if it doesn't go the way that, you know, public opinion wants it to. Okay. You don't want to have jurors making decisions out of fear for their own personal safety. that is something, and you know, so one of the issues they're arguing is that case should not have been heard in Minneapolis. It should have been a change of venue to someplace else. We'll see where that goes. It's an interesting argument. It's an interesting case to be following. But again, there's another mechanism there, right? If you get a one strike of a judge as a matter of right, you get to, you know, you do the voir dire and interview prospective jurors and are able to strike a certain number of jurors off of the jury, right? You have a possible change of venue. You have appeals. So we have a pretty good system that there's a lot of different safeguards to deal with the human element in jury trials.
Got a couple of comments here from the iHeartRadio app.
You want fair juries? I work with a lot of Amish. They live out of Balsam Lake area, Wisconsin. They don't have any TV. They don't have any social media. You want impartial juries? Find Amish. Good salt of the earth people. Hardworking. I think it'd work out.
So maybe there's like a cottage industry where we can just set up an entire justice system based only in Amish country, where we just tap into their potential, you know, untainted pool of jurors.
Yeah, the Constitution guarantees you a right to a trial by a jury of your peers. I don't think running every case through the Amish community is the solution, just because they're unplugged. They don't have smartphones to plug into.
Certainly sounds like fun, though.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like a good time.
Reality show, right?
Well, you know, when Jeff Probst can no longer, you know, keep up with the rigors of Survivor, maybe he can be the judge to oversee these these Amish jury pool cases. Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien in studio. Got a couple of other issues we want to run through with Jeff. If you have any questions for the lawyer extraordinaire, you can leave us a talk back on the iHeartRadio app. Give us a call, 651-989-5855. Coming up, we're going to dive into Ohio voting to legalize marijuana for adult recreational use, becoming the 24th state to do so, and the differences between what they're doing in Ohio versus what happened here in Minnesota. You definitely do not want to miss this. It's coming up next here on Twin Cities News Talk.
Comment was funny. Now I have visions of people buried under the horse park because of the Amish mafia.
There's an Amish mafia?
I didn't know that.
Hey, if Lawyer Extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien hasn't heard of an Amish mafia, I'm hesitant to say there is an Amish mafia.
I think there's a Mennonite mafia.
I don't think that's true.
No?
I don't know. I'm probably going to get an email. I'm going to get a talk back going, of course there's an Amish mafia. Have you never heard of... I was trying to come up with a quick Amish name, but Hamish? Hamish and his Amish mafia? Is that an Amish name?
Jeremiah?
That's a good one. That's a good one as well. All right.
Abraham? Kingpin, great movie, by the way. Come on.
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien joins me in studio this morning. We were talking about jury pools, tainted juries in an age of social media. The Derek Chauvin trial, I'm going to get to a phone call here in just a moment, but the Derek Chauvin trial, they've kicked something up to the Supreme Court. I mean, you have to forgive me. They've kicked something up to the Supreme Court, right? Isn't the fairness of the trial based on the fact that it was here in Minneapolis,
yeah,
is that what's going to be debated?
I believe so, yes.
What do you think that because we had all that information that came out recently. There was that individual that stepped forward, talked about the pressure that the prosecution was under to move forward and get a conviction on Chauvin. Do you happen to have any sort of quick thoughts on what may happen with that case?
I haven't studied it in depth. I would be shocked if they give him a new trial. You know, if they argue that he should have had a different venue, but we'll see. They could decide that there was too much pressure on the jurors. I don't know.
It seems like, and this almost plays into the conversation that we were having, but it just my mind immediately goes to that is such a volatile case that had such global implications. I would be shocked to see, you know, a judge or a person in a position to go and make that decision decide to to have a new trial, you know. And I mean, but again, that's just sort of, you know, where my mind goes.
The question would be, where else would you have held it, right?
I mean,
there was no place in the state that wasn't aware of,
yeah,
of the case. So
with the argument, I'm just kind of spitballing here, but with the argument, then would it be potentially that you get a new group of prosecutors and defense attorneys? I don't, you know, that weren't so embedded.
No, it would all relate to the jury, right? Because you'd have, okay, because he would have still have his same defense attorneys, because the attorney general's office took over the case. The attorney general would still be handling the prosecution. It all goes down to, did the jury make a decision based on the facts of the case, or were there some outside factors that influenced them? And it would really, you know, you mentioned about the threat of, you know, the concern about, you know, violence or you know, riots or whatever it might be. That would be whether or not that was something that weighed into their decision. If they made a decision based on, if we don't go this way, there's, you know, Minneapolis is going to burn again, that would be the factor that would tip it. But I don't know that evidence, that the significant amount of evidence that the jurors felt that way.
So I feel a little better about this because of the three of us, myself, producer Robbie, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, none of us knew this, right? So apparently we're all very ignorant as it relates to the Amish and Mafia.
The Amish Mafia was a reality show.
The Learning Channel, also known as TLC, or maybe it was the Discovery Channel, or maybe it was the History Channel. One of those channels has a whole show about the Amish Mafia. It's worth your time. It is amazing. It was on about maybe 10 years ago.
I had good times. No idea. No clue.
Sorry, I only watch Little People, Big World.
Waka waka.
So if it's the Amish Mafia, is it like The Godfather? Do people wake up with horse heads in their bed or something, or what?
I'm gonna make you an offer on rotisserie chicken. Yeah. You can't refuse.
I can't imagine that. I mean, that's somebody's transportation, for crying out loud. I mean, yes, that would be like, yes, really egregious.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Have either of you been to Amish country in Pennsylvania?
No.
I have. And it was quite an experience. No electricity, obviously, no cars. But one thing I will say, though, is they have smorgasbords there. If either of you ever been to a smorgasbord,
no,
it's kind of like an upscale buffet. So they have basically those in Pennsylvania.
There's an Amish community in Minnesota. I think it's Long Prairie.
Yeah.
Because my wife and I have been up there. They, you know, one of the things they do is, you know, you see all the Amish built furniture. You can actually go there and they have their, okay, you can actually, you know, shop for furniture in their shops up there. It's pretty cool.
Are there Amish in the Ozarks?
That's on the quiz with, are there black bears in Florida? Those are questions I don't know.
Okay, because the Ozarks aren't Florida.
No.
I mean, aren't Pennsylvania?
No,
right?
Mm-mm.
We used to do a radio bit going back to that show that I used to do on KCXX X103.9. There was a bit. It wasn't my bit. It was the guy that I worked with, and it was calling the Ozarks to the square root of 4. So we would randomly call somebody who lives in the Ozarks to see if they could answer the question, what is the square root of 4? And the callers would have to guess whether or not they would know it. And we would become like a hot AC, you know, team. It was Richard and Justice calling in from Hot 94 with a cash prize. If you can answer the question, what is the square root of? Yeah.
Well, I would say my wife and I just had the dogs in Missouri for a dock diving competition. We drove through an Amish community, and we were in Springfield, which is north of Ozark, Missouri. And on the way there, we definitely passed through, and you know, Amish communities along the way. So
I think we're on to something. All right, let's go here before we run out of time.
And not too many Amish people in that show, Ozark, which was fantastic, by the way.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah, tremendous.
Ohio voters approved a measure legalizing marijuana on Tuesday, defying Republican leaders who had failed to pass the proposed law. Now, you want to talk about this, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, because there's some key differences between what they did in Ohio and what they did here, correct?
Well, in terms of how it was passed, I mean, it's a lot of the similar things. You have the, you know, being able to purchase, you know, up to, you know, 2.5 ounces or possess 2.5 ounces, grow plants at home, tax, you know, 10% tax, where the tax money is spent, and they've got all the social equity provisions in there. you know, all those. So it's very similar to Minnesota's law. The difference is this is being, as I understand how this ballot initiative works, is it's up to the Ohio legislature to, they can make amendments to it. They could even repeal it. They could do a lot of things to it. So, as you know, and this is, I've been watching this one because I do feel that one of the keys to changing things at the federal level is to see a red state, you know, adopt full legalization, mm-hmm. right? Because up until now, it's been blue states.
Right.
So, you know, this, the Ohio legislature, which is, you know, it's a red state. The Republicans control the legislature. They have an opportunity here, to kind of change the conversation, right? Are they going to go the South Dakota route and attack it and repeal it and say no?
Right.
Which I think is a dumb idea. I mean, we've been saying this for a long time that the Republicans oppose this at their own electoral peril. You've got in Wisconsin, the Republican Assembly is hanging on by a thread, and the Democrats have put out a legalization bill as a way of trying to take the majority, right? So what happened here in Minnesota, other Democrat parties in other states are going to try to use that to try to get control of state legislatures. So Ohio needs to be mindful of that. They have an opportunity here to tell the country what a Republican legalization bill looks like, which would, in my opinion, probably remove any taxes that would be imposed mm-hmm. could be applied to offset income tax, right?
Okay.
Probably take the social equity piece out of it.
Nice.
And some of that kind of stuff, right? So, you know, we'll have to see. Time will tell. But I definitely think I don't know if the Republicans can be delivered a clearer message on cannabis than this, that, and we've been saying this for a long time, your own voters want this.
Right.
It baffles me why the party that supposedly stands for personal liberty and freedom continues to oppose the legalization of a plant that grows naturally.
Yeah, there's definitely, and I mentioned this earlier in the show in the wake of Tuesday's election. And, you know, these are opportunities to have these discussions. These are the opportunities that we have to sort of refocus and decide how we want to tackle these issues moving forward. Because clearly we've been losing on, and I say we, but Republicans have been losing on these issues, and it's time to reexamine them and you know, stop so much of the. Of the bickering and the infighting, listen to the other side and agree to disagree, all in the name of how do we win elections and who needs to agree to disagree in order to win those elections moving forward. So I'm glad that, one, that you came in this morning to run through this stuff, and two, that you had a chance to sort of point out an issue of like what they're dealing with in Ohio, you know, by comparatively speaking to what we've seen in other places around the country, because I think there is an opportunity there.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that you would like to mention, including where people, if they want to seek your legal advice and help, Lawyer Extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien?
Well, I've got the firm Chestnut Cambrone, I'm on there. You can also, I've got a personal website, jeffreyobrien.today, where I house all my content and all the clips to past shows and all that kind of stuff. But you can find me on X, find me on Facebook, find me on LinkedIn. I'm out there.